Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Five o'clock hours here. We're going to talk some boxing in about 25 minutes with Al Bernstein, former co, check that, wasn't my co, but former host on ESPN Las Vegas back in the day. And of course, 50 plus years around boxing, analyzing boxing. It's coming up. Reminder that on Mondays, we're back and better than ever. Ellis Allen in the front yard. You're going to be out there more than a few times with me. I didn't tell you that, but I think this Monday, because William is going to be at the Monday Night Football game.
Short rib bites.
We'll be out there. Pork belly bites.
So good.
They've added a chicken and waffles to the breakfast menu, which can be had anytime. Damn. They changed up their wings as well at the front yard. They're now smoked wings.
When is this again?
Why are you whispering? Do the fatso movie thing. As we get all oddly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mmm.
Oh. That just sounded like Frankenstein.
You ever suck the jelly out of a jelly donut and fill it with chocolate?
If you've ever had the bread pudding at the front yard. Mmm. If people haven't seen the movie Fatso with Dom DeLuise, go back and watch it. You'll understand the guttural grunts that we have going on right now. They have happy hour every day. No, check that. Monday to Friday, 4 to 7. So that's going on right now. Ellis Allen craft beers are just $5. $7 cocktails, $7 bites. So a lot of the stuff we're talking about, the pork belly bites, is on the bites menu. Their shareables are dynamite.
Dude, the pretzel's amazing, too.
The pretzel is great.
Yes.
And then the other thing, I think this is the weirdest thing that I push, but I really mean it. They serve so much bacon between Village Pub in there and the front yard and even a little bit with the barbecue joint that they went and got their own bacon plant that supplies them.
Really?
That's why the bacon is so awesome. That's you can awesome. Order just bacon.
Yeah, no, it's great.
You just want to order four slices of bacon as an app.
You're like, all their meat is great.
Yeah.
With the last season, with the brunch there, NFL Sunday brunch, and one of my buddies ordered just a pound of bacon on the side, and I made fun of him at first. I was like, "Wow, we're not trying to look thin right now, are we?"
No.
He's like, "Nope, nope." And then throughout the game, I'm just kind of leaning my hand over, like, "Oh, that does look like good bacon."
Yeah. Okay, I might want to try that.
It was phenomenal.
I don't think you can finish all that. Ellis Allen is on.
I'll split a pound with you,
Koval and Flamingo, and they're also going through a massive expansion. They're opening it in phases, so they just opened up. I think they had that original bar in place since the mid-80s, I'll get an update on that. But that is out. They have a bigger gaming floor now, and they've got a whole new area up front that is right on Koval, right on, by the way, the race route for F1. So a lot of cool things going on. And we're going to be there every Monday. Every Monday, 3 to 6, and then 6 to 8, partying, giving away prizes, and probably grunting into the microphone as we have more and more of their food. But you should do it, too. We'll let you grunt on the microphone if you really enjoy it for our listeners. We had a lot of listeners last night, Bears and Vikings fans. I left about 5 minutes into the second half because Willie was hosting the party, and the Bears fans were really loud and really boisterous. I can't imagine what happened with – it was probably 30% Vikings fans. It must have gotten real loud with the stupid skull chant and everything else when your Bears lost. I want to get to the Bears in 5 minutes, all right? By the way, go check out IG. Go check out Twitter, ESPN Las Vegas, at Steve Cofield, and watch Willie Will. That's who he turns into when he's hosting these parties. Here's fun. Just getting the crowd going. You did a good job of that. I've seen you out. Your remote's at the Palms.
Oh.
With the Hank.
Yeah.
I thought you had some real good flair on the mic.
I've been said to have a decent stage presence in my
day. That's pretty good, man.
Hey, thanks.
You get people jacked up.
I appreciate it.
With your Crocodile Dundee hat. You got to invest in a real hat.
I know. I'm going to have to. Because the one I have kind of shrunk now, too. It looks
like did it?
Yeah. It almost looks like one of those little Irish hats or whatever.
Oh, no.
It's terrible.
All right, UNLV football is unbeaten. They're undefeated. Anthony Calandria, the quarterback, won another Offensive Player of the Week in the Mountain West Conference. They beat UCLA 30-23. That's kind of crazy. You put some stats down here, Griffin. I hadn't even looked at that. During the game, I was like, man, UNLV just kind of dominated the first half, had time of possession. They never had the ball in the second half, so UCLA actually outpaced them in the second half. Piled up 70 more yards. It got dangerous at the end. I never felt like UNLV was in big jeopardy.
Me neither.
It was 23-3 and 30-13, and then they did have a final drive to tie the game. So we come out of this feeling pretty good about a 3-0 start, right?
Yeah.
With a bye week. Now they're in a bye week. This is good. You did what you had to do.
It's a great start. It's a great start, especially for having the first in the first year under Dan Mullen going 3-0. And UCLA, people could say what they want about UCLA. Oh, they're garbage. Nico was overhyped. Say what you want. UCLA with the pedigree, the history of that program. They're in the Big 12. They're not been in the Big 12 for that long, but they still are a Big 12 program. I mean, back in the day, even just a few years ago, or even during my time in high school, I could never imagine UNLV going head-to-head with a Big 12 squad or a Pac-12 squad even, and looking the way that the Rebels did, which was like the way I could describe it, in control. They controlled that game. And even at the last drive where UCLA was driving and to potentially tie it up, you didn't sit there and think, oh, they're helpless, the Bruins are just going to drive on them. No, UNLV stood strong. They forced the turnover. I think the vibes, the energy for this team should be real high right now.
I'll build on what you said about beating UCLA and feeling comfortable. When they were up 23-3 and they were up 30-13, I was actually thinking, okay, this is about the way this game should be going. I didn't think it would go that way, but as you watch it, you're like,
right,
yeah, this doesn't feel like a massive upset. Then UNLV made some mistakes, and then you're like, okay, they shouldn't be doing this. Like, now you're in a UNLV football era here where you're really critical.
I know.
Like, in the past, it was like, well, they're close, they're competitive.
Yeah.
Of course, they're bound to make mistakes. Hopefully, maybe they can eke out an upset win. Like, people were going to be really pissed off if they had lost that game.
100%. And, you know, expectations, I think, is part of being a good team. Is, you know, now you know they're good because people expect them to do, you know, like you said, there's not going to be any of this, oh, you know, they played well but lost crap. People want to win, and I think people expect them to win. I think they're going to win. I think they're actually a better football team this year than they were last year. How about that?
Griffin?
Maybe. Potential. They have the potential. I'm not going to say that yet because Barry Odom and those boys did something real special last season.
So they did.
I'm going to hold off on that, but I will say this. They are on track. They are on track.
I don't think
they're
better than last year right now, but they have the potential to be better. They have more natural talent. They have more size. They have more depth.
I was going to say
their discipline,
yeah,
is nowhere near the Odom teams. And can they improve on that? Yeah, because a lot of it's just silly stuff. A lot of it is personal fouls, talking trash. And I know Mullen is trying to get through. I think he will, and hopefully they cut out most of it for the game in a couple weeks. I mean, that should be a big part of it, just drilling it into them. You know, fundamentals that are – or lack of or failure – to deliver on fundamentals that are resulting in a lot of penalties. And then the emotional stuff just doesn't need to happen. It's just dopey.
I agree.
Like, you know, act like you've been there.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a case where they scored a touchdown in the first half to go up 23-0, and then they have a personal foul that sets them up for a short kickoff, and then UCLA's in good field position and went down and could have scored a touchdown. They had to settle for a field goal, but that kind of stuff can't happen.
I guess the way I look at it is last year going into it, they had a great season last year. But I don't think going into that season the expectations were as high as they were going into this season. So I think the high expectations, better schedule. You know, people are like, oh, their schedule's brutal this year. And now they're 3-0. So, I mean, and I don't think they look like, you know, maybe the first – or what was it, the second game? No, the first game, it looked like that week zero game where they might have had a chance to lose that game and they pulled it out in the end. Otherwise, they look pretty controlled the last 2 weeks, like they're getting better. And I think they're going to get better as the season goes along. Maybe finish a top 20 team or something.
I will say they're better at quarterback as long as Calandria can keep it together in terms of mistakes.
He looked great in the first half.
And Haj Malik Williams was really good last year.
Yeah.
But Calandria, I think, can be better at quarterback. And we'll see about the defense. You know, they're playing a new style of defense with Paul Gunther as a DC, a former NFL defensive coordinator. And Mullen said it after the game the other day that Gunther is also having to adjust because Mullen is kind of drilling it into him that this is a long season. It's a little different than the NFL. Not that it's a longer season because the NFL's longer, but
right.
Like as an example, Pete Carroll's defense, Pat Graham's defense, like most of the same guys played the entire game, and Mullen is really big on, and so was Odom. Hey, Paul Gunther, we got to rotate a lot more. So Gunther's not used to using as many players as he's using. Last week against Sam Houston State, they had 23 defensive players get at least 13 snaps. 23.
Yeah, that's a lot.
This week they had 19 get at least 10 snaps. So they're rotating a lot of players in, which, you know, part of that is having your team ready for the long haul, you know, it's also prepping young guys for playing time now and then later in the season. I hate to say it, but even this early in the season, you're also playing young guys because you're like, listen, you're part of the future.
Right.
I'm showing you, you're getting playing time.
Yeah.
Don't leave.
Yes.
But you have to kind of be recruiting all the time. And he's got some guys he brought in over the summer. I was like, I don't know. He brought in a guy, Elias Rudolph, who's a Florida kid, was a four-star recruit, went to Miami for a year, comes here. He's like 6'5", 210. You can see when he fills out, he's going to be like 6'5", 235. And he's out there in week three. You're like, okay. Right. He's got other young guys who are playing. So it's I know Gunther's, as Mullen said, is having to adjust to like playing depth, maybe sure. not playing your best all the time. But there's an eye on the future, too. So,
well, speaking of depth, no, you're right. Just speaking of depth, watching that game on offense in the first half against UCLA, I was shocked at how much faster, like, this – it was like a skill position guy. Like, wow, who's that guy? That guy's – you know, that guy – then the next guy, whoa, who's that guy? And that's like three or four guys where I'm like, wow, these guys are much faster than the guys trying to cover them. There's some real depth in the skill position players.
Well, think about it. At wide receiver, they had Jaden Bradley go for, I think it was – 10 catches and 257 yards. He had one catch and 5 yards in this last game. And guys like Day-Day Reynolds, who's a transfer from Pitt in Florida, he went out and had a touchdown.
Who was it that made that sick catch down the sidelines later in the game? I can't remember who it was now. It was a really nice catch, like under duress, too.
Might have been Reynolds.
Maybe.
I'll have to look at the whole box score.
I meant to look at it when it happened.
There were a bunch of receivers who hadn't gotten a ton of action who stepped up. Last week, Irvin had a touchdown catch, and he's a holdover, but you know, a guy who hadn't gotten a lot of targets over the years.
Steve, knowing what you do know so far of this Dan Mullen team and the squad, and I really like your point of rotating guys and using that as like a kind of a recruiting tactic in order to retain players. Do you think they keep doing that though? Once we get later in the schedule, when you got a stretch where you're facing Wyoming, Air Force, Boise State. Later down the road, you're facing Hawaii, where we saw Hawaii's offense with Micah Alejado. If he's in, that they could do some things. You think they'll still keep that rotation, or do you think they're going to try and keep guys in a little bit more of a continuity?
I don't know. I think they're going to keep rotating. I mean, it might tighten up a little bit. UCLA was the best game so far on their schedule in terms of the talent across the way. So, no, I think they're going to stick to rotating. Because they have depth, they have depth, and they're going to need it because at all the positions, there could be another Alex Orji-type injury. One of the great things about Odom's staff was Jeff Fish, who was the head of strength and conditioning, and they had, like, almost no injuries. Mm-hmm. It was amazing how, yes, they used depth, but they had no injuries. I was just trying to look for the receiver who might have had a sweet catch.
I know, I was too.
Tight ends had two touchdowns, Gums up the middle, Elksness up the middle. Tayshaun Lyons got a catch in. Troy Omire, he had two catches. He's a 6'5 kid who was at Texas and Arizona State. Yeah, that was kind of the log this week. My guy Coy Moore, who I thought was going to be a real big impact, he hasn't gotten out to a great start. He played a little bit. JoJo Earl was shut out in this game. He had a good game against San Jose State. So, yeah, they're deep. They're deep. And, yeah, there's a lot of pitfalls on the schedule, so I wouldn't – if you're a Rebel fan, don't get all freaking spoiled because all these games have had their warts. In two of the three games, they got out to a big lead. Gave up a lot of the lead, and there are tough games. At Boise, Colorado State just struggled with Northern Colorado. I don't care. You have to go up there. You don't know what the weather's going to be like. Air Force comes here, playing the triple option, giant pain in the ass. It's the worst.
And conference games, too. When you're facing some of these Mountain West teams, and you think the Rebels have it in the bag, don't be so sure, because, when you're facing in-conference rivals, those games it's hard to predict them. It's hard to know what's going to happen.
So Griffin does not want to be glass half full for the Bears. I think we're both glass half full. Yeah. Saw enough good things last night where you're like, okay. I thought they were going to be a pretty solid team, compete for 8 or 9 wins. But I do get it on the flip side. If you pointed out a few things, the run game was just okay. Caleb Williams was good. A lot of it was, the off-schedule stuff, scrambling. DJ Moore really wasn't very active. I wouldn't flip out after one game. Every game's a little bit different. I thought Ben Johnson was running some good stuff, but there were also mistakes by Caleb Williams that have to be fixed.
He seems kind of weird to me. Like, whenever, when the camera gets on, even like Jameis Winston's another guy who I think is kind of weird. Like, his facial expressions sometimes, you don't think he's all there or something. I feel like Caleb Williams sometimes, his facial expressions, I'm like, what is going through this dude's head right now? I don't know how to explain it. Maybe I'm just being critical or something, but there's something.
Maybe you're being critical.
Well, too
overly critical.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, there's like a little, something a little off about the kid. I don't know.
Well, let me tell you right now, what's off with him to me, watching last night's game, this is a guy who since college, since he won the Heisman, he has made a career off of being run around guy, make heroes, hero bowl. That's his brand of football, or at least it has been up to this point. Last night, we watched a guy, and even in, like I said, in the first drive, and everyone could say that's the best drive of the Bears' night because he was 6 for 6, and it ended with him running for a touchdown. I don't want to see you run for a touchdown. I want you to be a brick like Jared Goff, because our offensive coordinator / head coach, his system is proven. He took it to Detroit. He made the Detroit Lions a contender. Not just for the NFC North, for the freaking NFC, for the entire NFC. He obviously knows what he's doing. So why is it that we got a guy at quarterback, second year, who went out there and looked absolutely frazzled at times, missed reads, missed DJ Moore down the line, where if they score on that play action pass, and if he wasn't so fixated on his first read, the running back's going out, then the game, we're probably sitting here having a whole different conversation. So I'm saying that to say this. Right now in Bears football, the only positive we have, and I say the biggest one we got, Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson takes priority over everybody, over Caleb Williams, over Ryan Poles, over anybody on the roster, coaching staff, players. It doesn't matter. He is the top priority. So if you are not going to fit in that system, I'm sorry, man. You're not made for Chicago. You're not
after
you're
one
here
game.
For long.
After one game, first of all, I'm smiling because
Griffin's half full.
This,
by the way,
this yeah, right. He's drops at the bottom of the glass. I admire Griffin's passion on this so much because, as I mentioned at the start of the show, the Jets have beaten it out of me.
Right,
and like I get really mad during the games, and I'm mad for like 10 minutes after.
Yeah,
and then I just let it go, which is. Means I'm a bad radio guy now. I need to come in on fire. But also people in Vegas are like, we don't want to hear about the Jets, so screw off. You're still like that. You're still a freaking lunatic. And your team is awesome with the Eagles. But you still get incredibly worked up.
I call into work the next day when they lose. That's like how much I hate losing.
Well, I know you won't watch a game with anyone.
No.
And I really don't. I don't do that either. At home, we have 2 TV rooms set up. And most of the time, my girlfriend just sits in the other room.
Yeah. No, they don't want to be around me.
Because every once in a while, like, I just, out of nowhere, you know, it's just like a ball gets tipped in the air. It's like, get it!
Yeah, I know.
And she's like, you know.
Yeah. I'm screaming, cursing,
all over the place.
Kicking things, your plastic breaking. Like
I know there was a tip ball where the Jets had a chance for an interception. And I just screamed or, you know, I'm just yelling at Justin Fields for not going to the right place or throwing instead of running.
Thank God I was the only person in this building last night, or else I could be.
You're watching it here?
I was. I mean,
that's kind of good. That's a good plan.
Yeah. I had to. I'm not gonna go. I'm not gonna go home and then risk missing time. I'm gonna like the game had already started before we were even out.
Oh, that's right.
So I had to watch. But
you know, Adam Hill, who's been on Cofield and Company forever, he was a Bills fan. He gave up on him because he got pissed off about the way they treated Tyrod Taylor of all reasons.
I remember
that. We would go watch games because we do and he was doing that at the time, the Sunday football preview show at the Westgate. We would go into the International Theater. They had the VIP section open up top, and a group of us would go up there and watch the games. He would not sit with us for any of the Bills games. You would see him like down 4 sections over, like in the dark with a hood on and just like hunched. He will not watch the games with anyone around.
I don't like that either. But hey, who is his team now?
He doesn't have one. So now his whole thing is like, well, I cover the NFL, so I have to be objective.
Oh, he's unbiased now.
I think he has players.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense.
So, you know, it's funny the way this has developed. If Justin Fields can't make it through the season, Adam Hill, former Bills fan, will actually be rooting for the Jets.
Oh, I bet that puts a big old smile on your face. Do you think he'll watch the Jets games with you once he becomes a Jets fan?
I don't think it'll be that intense. And no, I won't watch them with him. Because he'll flip on a dime. You know, he'll flip immediately. He'll be like, he's rooting for Tyrod Taylor, but as soon as the Jets do poorly, then he's mocking on the Jets.
Hey, who wins more games, the Jets or the Giants?
Jets.
Ooh. That's a bet, because I'm swearing by the Giants.
Yeah.
If I bet the Giants, I'd have to root against my own team. I like how you twisted that.
For like some sushi or something.
Coming up next, Chicago guy. He is a Bears fan. Boxing legend Al Bernstein is awesome. I start to stumble when I talk about his accolades over the years. But he's going to get us ready for Canelo and Crawford. He's got a busy week coming up. I know he's got another singing engagement. And we'll go back in the history annals of boxing to kind of set up this one, which is a mega fight. You've got two of the best in that middle range of weights. Can't wait for it.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's continue to get ready for the Crawford Canelo fight. Grand arrivals today at Fontainebleau. A little different. Al Bernstein is in with us, legendary boxing analyst. Up with Salerno and Cofield. Al, what's up, buddy?
Hey, good to be with you. We got a big fight week here with a fight that's going to put a lot of people in the Allegiant Stadium, apparently.
Do you feel like, from the stuff you've seen, that Canelo and Crawford are starting to build a healthy dislike for each other? Because that always adds to the fight promotion before the fight.
I don't know. I think there's... Look, Canelo is normally, other than a couple of instances, has not engaged in too much of that with opponents. Bud Crawford can be a little salty, but he doesn't have a larger life personality with all that. So I don't think that's going to be the main feature of this, but I'm sure they'll, as we get closer to the fight, given that although they don't have to worry about selling pay-per-views, do they? we'll probably see more of that.
Hey, Al, I wanted to ask you, I brought this up earlier, but going into this fight, it seems like Crawford has a lot more to gain than Canelo does, because Canelo's already Canelo. I don't know. It just seems like if he wins, he's not going to gain a whole lot from this, but if he loses, it'll be huge. Am I wrong?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Of the two boxers, there's no question it's a little more risky for Canelo Alvarez because he's fighting a man that's coming two weight classes up, and really three, because Crawford is more known as a welterweight. He's only had one fight at the 154-pound weight class. So certainly it's a way bigger risk for Crawford, and it's much easier, should he lose this fight, to not have it affect him dramatically. I mean, look, even if Canelo Alvarez loses, it doesn't eliminate his successes or ruin his legacy. But nonetheless, there's no question he's got more, I think, at stake.
Al, do you get as hyped up as you, I don't know, 25 years ago? I was saying during the break, you were one of the guys during, I think, some of the most glorious eras of boxing, whatever, mid-70s into the mid-90s. Do you get as juiced as you used to get for big fights?
Yeah, I enjoy the prospect of them a lot, because it's fun to see, and especially, look, we're Las Vegas residents, and we... but even before I lived here, coming here in the 80s, I experienced during that period and into the 90s as well, a lot of those big moments with great fights. And, yeah, I think it's fun. I it's taken on a slightly different flavor because, the world's more digital and more viral. So you don't always feel the moment, physically in the city, because it's more compartmentalized, but still, it's a fun feeling.
Fight week, Cofield and Company, breaking it down with Al Bernstein. We'll get to the real breakdown of the fight from a style standpoint. To go back, again, and with your history in boxing, can you remember the fight that you were most excited about going in, the prospects of it, the hype before the fight?
Oh, boy. Well, one of them was Hagler Hearns, which I was privileged enough to announce.
Amazing.
So that added to the excitement of it. That one, I think we all kind of thought that. Now, nobody, I don't think, expected it to produce the greatest round of boxing maybe we'd ever seen. But we all thought, okay, this has potential to be an astonishing fight. So that was certainly one that, when you looked at it, you're like, wow, this is, this could be monstrous.
Was the pre-fight filled with angst? I mean, was there trash talk? I don't know that Hagler was... a big trash talker, but I suppose if he got annoyed, he could get into the fight promotion. Like, what was the pre-fight like?
Yeah, I'll tell you, there was angst, and here's why. Back then, I was talking about digitally and all the rest. You had to, you know, there was no way of reaching everybody in one fell swoop as there is now with just two press conferences. They did a tour of press conferences around the country, and neither of these men, they were sick of each other by the time they got done with it. You know, they just had enough of each other. And so by the time the fight happened, both of them were like, okay, I just can't wait to throw my hands. And boy, do they ever, huh?
Yeah, that fight was in 1985. What's the fight over the years when you were in the arena, maybe you're calling a fight or you're just working it as media, where you kind of, you stopped for a second, you looked around, you're like, holy crap, this is awesome. Like the atmosphere kind of, you got caught up in the atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, one was Pacquiao Mayweather. Even though the fight didn't produce wild, excitement, I remember at that looking around and thinking, wow, this is, there's a lot of, excitement built in here. The other one was Trinidad and De La Hoya.
Wow.
I remember that one.
I'll tell you what, that place was electric before when they did their walk-ins, and everybody, felt it was very special.
That is amazing. All the fights. So that was September 18th, 1999. That's the fight I was going to mention. And I don't think you and I have ever talked about this before. I just remember sitting there, and it just, there was such a freaking energy. And you got to, people now, obviously De La Hoya, people look at him a little bit differently. He was a great boxer, and both guys were on top of their game. It's like one of these matchups that we don't get a lot now. And there was an energy in the building where you're like, holy crap, this is going to be awesome.
That was a true mega match. That was one, that era of welterweights was exceptionally good. They were just a notch below the Four Kings, but there were some great matches during that era, and that one was the most marketable. There were a lot of great ones, but that one was the most marketable, and that was the, you had the rivalry between Bob Arum and Don King, the Mexico-Puerto Rico tussle, because Oscar was from Mexican heritage, and first Trinidad, one of the great Puerto Rican champions. So there's a lot going on there.
Hall of Famer Al Bernstein on the line on Coalfield & Company. The one I was going to bring up was actually, it wasn't a good fight or anything, but the Tyson-Spinks one where Tyson had punched a hole in the wall and came out with that weird noise. Like, there was no music. It was just like a weird droning sound. Then he just comes out and, like, dispatches of the guy in 30 seconds. That was pretty crazy to me. But you brought up the, Mayweather and Pacquiao fight, and I was wondering, could this fight this week kind of be the fight we thought we were getting there with the classic boxer versus puncher matchup type thing, because you don't think one of these guys is going to be running around like Mayweather did that whole fight?
Well, this fight is interesting because Crawford's not a classic boxer. He's more of a boxer puncher. So we're not going to see him doing too much movement. He'll move and he'll use angles for sure. And Canelo, a counter puncher, but obviously the bigger puncher of the two men. Neither man is a volume puncher. So the hopes of having a really exciting matchup, I think, depend on both men maybe upping their volume a little bit in this fight. Canelo is the one that Alvarez is kind of the one that we would anticipate maybe doing a little more damage and getting the other in trouble, because Canelo Alvarez has an amazing chin, and of course he's the bigger man. But it's not going to be classic boxer puncher, but we know that for Crawford to win, he's probably not going to win by knockouts. So he's going to have to, in effect, outbox Canelo Alvarez.
Okay, gut feeling. Is the big guy with the chin going to overwhelm the smaller guy, or is this, as we've seen so many times in the past, when a smaller guy moves up, he kind of schools the big guy?
Yeah, well, the question is whether this is going to look like Jermell Charlo and Canelo, because Charlo came up from 154. Now, he was a 254-pounder. He was never in the fight with Canelo Alvarez. I mean, there was just not any moment where it looked like Charlo was challenging him. And so some worry that this could be the same as that. I don't know if that's the case. I'm pretty sure that Terrence Crawford will be more competitive and be more invested in winning. I don't mean to be critical. You know, I very seldom am this critical of fighters, but Jermell Charlo never seemed super invested in winning that fight, honestly. Crawford, I would expect to be more invested. The smaller fighters coming up have traditionally had a problem against bigger fighters. You know, Roy Jones Jr. was the exception when he moved up to heavyweight. So the onus is on Crawford to show that he can, you know, deal with the bigger size and the better power and the more physicality of Canelo Alvarez.
Al, you know, we're as interested in the boxing as much as you're singing. You've got another engagement this week. Are you doing Thursday at the Tuscany?
Yeah, I like to do music shows before these big fights, and we will be doing a show Thursday night at Suites and Casino, Piazza Lounge. We'll do music, boxing trivia, give some prizes away. And I got a new wrinkle for this one. Layla McCarter, who I'm sure you guys know, an iconic woman boxer who is rated the number 10 top woman of all time by Ring Magazine. I'm going to have her as my special honored guest, and we're going to kind of pay tribute to her a little bit at the show. So I thought that would add another wrinkle to the evening. And she's such a lovely person, and I think she's a member of the Nevada Boxing Hall of Fame, but I feel like I want to honor her a little bit more. So we'll have lots of fun music, people win prizes, and they can meet Layla McCarter, a great champion.
I'll jog my memory. How many stadium fights, or, you know, this isn't outdoor, but how many stadium fights have you called in the past or been at?
That's a good question. I did several at Wembley Stadium. A couple of them with Anthony Joshua, with 90,000 people there. That was staggering.
Jeez.
I mean, that was just so exciting. Him against Klitschko, which was a wildly exciting fight, and him against one or two other fighters. So that I did. The funny thing is, this one's indoors, what you said. I'm not a fan of outdoor boxing. I feel like it's, you know, the only reason to do outdoor boxing is that you can put 50 or 60 or 70,000 people or more in a stadium for a fight. Otherwise, I just think with the elements and all the rest of it, it's not worth the trouble. The ones I did with him were of recent vintage. I think the ones that I can most remember of doing, you know, outdoors at a stadium.
I'll tell you what I'm not a fan of. Exhibition matches. Mayweather Tyson, Jake Paul, and Tank. Listen, I know there could be draws. I guess it shines some kind of light on boxing. I don't know what we're doing, Al.
I look at all of the novelty fights as one-offs.
Okay.
The only one that is slightly different, that's hard to look at as a one-off, is Paul against Gervonta Davis, because that takes a real fighter out of the loop.
Yeah.
You know, all the other ones, you know, it's like, okay, whatever, go do your thing. And I've announced some of those, so I'm not going to be a hypocrite. But, you know, they can be fun, and that's fine. There's nothing, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong, except, number one, it doesn't represent boxing. And number two, when it takes a real boxer out of circulation, then I think you have a right to criticize it.
Al, where can people find stuff that you're doing this week in terms of analysis? I know you're doing a lot of interviews, so everyone should look on social media for all the stuff that you're doing on shows like this, but where else?
Yeah, if they go on YouTube, I'm doing some reports on the Salida Promotions channel. I'm doing a bunch of my Hot Topic shows and things of that nature there, and they can take a peek at that. And I've been everywhere for the last 5 days, so somehow by accident they're going to find me, right?
There you go. One more time, tell people about the show. What's going on Thursday?
Yeah, fun night, I hope. Show's at 8 o'clock and 9:30 at the Piazza Lounge at the Tuscany. No cover charge, so just come over. Have a couple of cocktails if you want, and enjoy the music. We're going to have music of all kinds, and boxing trivia, give some prizes away, and honor Layla McCarter. So hopefully it'll be a fun evening.
By the way, I know you're being sarcastic. You're like, fun time, I hope. Greg, as an example, is a stand-up comedian, and he's very hard on himself. Al, have you done a show? Have you sang somewhere? And you were like, afterwards you're like, that was terrible. I hated that.
You know, I've done, I'm going to be honest, I've yeah. done shows where I said to myself, I didn't like everything I did. Oh, wow. And if, and I'm harder, probably harder on myself because I don't do it all the time, right?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
If you're a person that performs all the time, you throw it aside. It's like a relief pitcher. Oh, that one didn't work, but I'll be back tomorrow. But when you only perform all every couple months or something or whatever, you know, you tend to be a little more... So I have that. I have a one or two that I wasn't crazy about.
I wonder what it's like to get to the point as a performer where you're like, you know what, I just want the money, and I know I'm not what I used to be because I'm just going to make a reference, and I don't want to beat up on the guy, but my girlfriend is going to see Motley Crue, and I've seen some of Vince Neil on some of these videos, and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah.
I mean, God bless him. He's making money. People still want to go see it, but I sense that, Al, you have a pride where you're like, no, I want to be good. I just don't want to go out. And you're not getting paid for this anyway, but like, I want to be good. I'm just not going to cash a check. I have to achieve.
And there's all levels of good. You know, maybe yeah. you're a performer that, you know, you're older and you're doing your thing. And, you know, you might not be exactly. The Eagles are a perfect example. The Eagles are not the same people they were 35 years ago, but they're doing a really good job. And that's good enough, you know. So yeah. you would hope that everybody that does something, they want to be at least as good as they can be. And if you reach the point where I've talked about this in terms of boxing broadcasting. I mean, I love doing broadcasting. I still get asked to do it. I prepare as diligently as I ever have. If I felt like I was not doing it well, I'm being really honest. I would stop doing it.
Yeah. Well. Not everyone does that, and everyone says that. I'll bring up another musician. I was down in Cabo like a couple months ago, and you know, Sammy Hagar's got his Cabo Wabo down there, and they're going to do a big birthday celebration. He'll be 78 in October, and I saw him when he was like 75, and he's still awesome. Like, I cannot believe he does what he does.
That's amazing. Yeah, because that's another thing. Depending on the genre you're doing, it is harder to be really
yes,
good
yes.
at an older age. So that's, you know, that's pretty remarkable. And I think we marvel at people that can do things. And I think it's kind of self-awareness, isn't it?
I feel like sometimes 78 is like the new 55, but I'm 55 and I feel 78. So I don't know what the hell's going on right now. I don't know what's happening.
You know what? That is a very Cofield. That's why.
Yeah, there you go.
That's classic Steve Cofield.
Thank you, Al. Thank you. All right, Al. Thanks for coming on. I know you're really busy, and we appreciate the breakdown of the fight and the fight history.
Always good to be with you guys. Take care.
Yes. One of our favorites, Al Bernstein.
I think Frankie Valli's doing pretty good.
Well, that's one. That's an example. I don't think he knows where he is anymore.
Dude, I don't think
that one's really sad.
I think just turn him around to face the crowd and turn the music on.
All right. I'm going to – Al actually led us down – it's your fault, Al. Al led us down this path. I saw Terry Bradshaw with a take. I don't agree with it. We're going to play it on the way back. I just feel like – listen, I'm not always objective on media people. I try to have their backs. I feel like Terry Bradshaw is getting – having the back of another old guy. I hate this take.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
All right, I'll admit I'm probably wrong on this. Even before I play this, I'm already starting to feel bad. You got me all sensitive at the beginning of the show, trying to get us to back off Phillies Karen, the lady who got the foul, the home run ball and yelled at.
She looks like Mike Francesco a little bit, by the way. You notice that?
A little bit.
Yeah.
That's good. Terry Bradshaw, the Micah Parsons deal, I think it's a complete freaking joke. I think the Cowboys gaffed this. I think it's all Jerry getting inside his feelings, and he wants to win the battles. And there's been this effort to try to explain away how Micah Parsons was, they got two first-round picks. You got a player for him. Like, yeah, it's a generational type talent who's 26 years old.
Yeah.
You don't trade him, and you don't trade him for that little haul, and you don't trade him in your own conference. But here was Terry Bradshaw.
I think Jerry Jones did the right thing. I don't blame him one bit. I would have unloaded him. Saves me a ton of money on the salary cap, number one. All right? He's automatically getting two more first-round picks to go with the two he's already got. And who's to say that at the end of this year, if things don't work out, somebody's going to get traded and pick up another one. Jerry Jones is sitting in the driver's seat. I think it was a smart decision. And here's the one thing about Jones, whether or not Parsons was a difference maker or not with the injury to the back, and you big deal.
I disagree. I'm not buying it.
Okay, I do.
Dr. Terry. Now the back is going to ruin the whole deal for years?
Hang it up, fella. I think it's time. I like him, but...
You got the two first-round picks with the two you have already. Yeah, they're your first-round picks.
Yeah, I know. And they're late first round. They're probably going to be in their 20s, 28th.
The Packers pick could be 28th.
Yeah.
It could be 32.
Exactly.
They could win the Super Bowl.
I know.
I mean, Parsons played 29 snaps in the game over the weekend.
Yeah. Super silly, dude.
And the defense had three sacks in the 29 plays, and yards per play for the Lions were 2.4.
Plus.
So don't tell me he has no impact, and he's not even 100%. Hasn't been with the team.
Plus,
and if you look back at the numbers for the Cowboys, they were a much better defense when he was on the field versus when he wasn't.
Yes, and we had all kinds of stories now coming out about how there was teams making offers as far back as the spring or before the draft. He could have done it then and got
There's
it
no way they couldn't have gotten more.
No, here
it was last minute, and that's why they got almost nothing
exactly.
for him.
Exactly, you're exactly
because
right.
Because he's an arrogant...
One of the reports right here is now the Eagles, obviously you don't want him to go to your division rival, but two first-round picks, a third-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and a player. They had offered for Micah, you know, back in the spring. Now, those are late picks, too, but you still get three extra picks and a player.
Trust me. They could have found a team that'll finish in the 8 to, like, 18 range.
Yes.
And Parsons wouldn't be able to stop the deal.
No.
They could have traded to a team in the AFC, not in the conference. More Bradshaw?
Jerry Jones had to answer to no one to make this trade. It wasn't the Jimmy Johnson trade when Jimmy moved Walker and they got the six players and they unloaded the six players, which equaled six draft picks. This is going to be the same thing, though. Good move by Jerry Jones.
It's not going to be the same thing. Jimmy Johnson was the one who made the deal. Jimmy Johnson was the guy who made the picks. The Jones boys can't pick.
Yeah. The only...
Well, what's he... I mean, you're going to go on the draft and it's like, oh, let's get another guard on the offensive line. Draft a safety.
Yeah.
At you know, that'll be their first pick. Their pick will be high because they're not going to be good.
Right.
He did the right thing.
The only similarity.
It's going to be like the Herschel Walker deal. I mean, come on.
The only similarity between this and the Herschel Walker deal is that this deal is almost as dumb as Herschel Walker. That's the only thing.
God. Really irks me.
It's annoying. It's dumb.
And I guarantee you could probably get Bradshaw just really bad mouthing Micah Parsons for like the podcast, you know, sleeping.
Back in my day, we didn't do podcasts. We had six plays, and I ran them all.
You did a lot more than players do now, I can tell you that.
We had four run plays and two pass plays, and I tell you what, I made them all worth it.
I would love to see players of the past own up to their discipline and their teammates' discipline off the field.
Right.
And compare it to doing a podcast and ruffling some feathers with a couple of words as opposed to what you guys were doing off the field.
Yeah.
Between whatever, trying to make yourself as good as possible, which, you know, we know that the Steelers dabbled in that stuff. And then if you watch Cocaine Cowboys and the exploits or the mentions of the Steelers and the Cowboys down to the Super Bowl in Miami and the reps of those guys. And go, yeah, here's the other one. I'll stop. I don't know why I have to take shots at Terry Bradshaw just because he has a
back in my day
a take where he's backing another old guy.
We didn't have six packs. We had 37% body fat and we played with it well.
It just drives me nuts.
You think Terry Bradshaw, if you're going to defend Jerry Jones, you don't admit that Jimmy Johnson was behind the Herschel Walker trade. You don't admit that. You say that was all Jerry. That was all Jera.
Well, he's wrong. This deal is going to be a disaster.
It already is.
And
I already watched it on television.
Salary cap room for an 83-year-old does what?
Nothing.
Not to be morbid.
No, I know. It's stupid.
Yeah. I really don't get these guys like Mike Brown or Jerry Jones where you're like, oh, let's rebuild here.
I think
what are you rebuilding for? Are you gonna be here?
Yeah, but this happens a lot in the media with celebrities and stuff. I think that he has a certain, like, Jerry Jones has a list on his text group text that he hits out every once in a while that's like, hey, I need you guys help here. Because I mean, you see guys like Adam Schefter saying ridiculous things about the guy, and then he's even being corrected in his face. You could just tell it came from Jerry Jones's mouth, the stuff that Schefter was saying. I'm like, does this guy have like a control over half the media or something? Because seems like it,
you know. Just as much, you mentioned Mike Brown. I think who also should get a little bit of criticism right now are these teams with these super quarterbacks. Why were they not more aggressive to try and get a guy like Micah Parsons?
Yep.
your window is so small. And I mean, Buffalo.
Because he's never cared about winning. And Jerry did early, but ultimately, Jerry cares about getting Jerry attention.
Yeah.
Winning is not the number one goal in Dallas. And listen, if you're Cowboy fans out there, and I know a bunch of them are like, good deal. Okay, if you want to be part of some cult.
Yeah.
You haven't made the NFC title game in 30 years.
Defense looked great.
What is your loyalty to this guy? I told you I was talking to a Cowboy fan. I didn't tell you, but I was mentioning I was talking to a Cowboy fan last week, and he's like, well, he's better than the Jets owner. Yeah, the Jets suck. You're right. The Jets owners have been terrible. Right. That's the bar. Okay, like tiptoe over that one. It's freaking an inch off the ground. That's the bar you're trying to cross?
Is he, though? I think the Jets have been in the championship game since he has.
The Jets actually have been more AFC title games.
Yeah. Come
on. But the Jets are not a better organization. Woody Johnson is not.
All right.
Again, you don't want to. If Woody Johnson is the bar, you've lost all hope for your organization. But, you know, some Cowboy fans out there, they love him. Enjoy Micah with the best team, well, potentially. One of the best organizations in the NFC. That's going to hurt.